And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show. I have Michael Carton in studio as usual on a Thursday. Cheddar Plunkett is on the line. Cheddar, how's it going?
Very good now, Willie.
This is your GAR debut now, Cheddar, so you're on trial here, I hope you know.
Have I been marred here?
We'll mark you later on tonight. Yeah, we'll go through it with a fine-tooth comb. Come here, lads. James Toher is on the line, or is on the show in part two. James Toher is an interesting story. He's a dual player in Meath. He tried to play dual last year. He got in trouble. He got thrown off the hurling panel for playing dual. He actually lifted the Christy Ring Cup twice in 3 weeks the year before, made a speech, and then had to make the same speech again. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. Mead play Westmead at the weekend. But it was an interesting quote when I was doing a bit of research on James. He actually said, and this is in relation to dual players, "I often feel I'm better playing when I play both hurling and football with my club anyways, because hurling would give you the quick hands and football would give you a lot of the physicality. I think they complement each other." Now, I don't know what the two of you think down through the years. Cheddar, I know when you were with Laois, you would have had Cathair Healy would have committed to the hurling. He wouldn't have been done both. The general consensus is out there that you can't do it. So I was just surprised to hear James thinking they complemented each other.
I think James is right in a sense that they are broadly similar games. They do complement one another. The process are the same. We defend the same. We attack the same. Open up space and all of that. So I think he's right in saying that the issue really here is time, and particularly at county level. I think the game has just gone so tactical now that every team will have its own broad game plan, but that will get tweaked for each game that you're going to play, and depending on the opposition that you're going to play. And you will rehearse all of those aspects of that plan in the previous week or the previous fortnight. So even in its simplest form, like your position on the field and your role on your own puck house, you will be rehearsing. So generally speaking, it's probably fair to say that a dual player is a critical player within the team, and both football and hurling, he probably is the better player. And if that player is going to be missing in training in the week, if they're coming up to an important game, and he misses what his job is to do on these things, it's going to affect the team's performance. And, you know, if pre-planned things don't work out in the game plan, it has knock-on effects in terms of the team losing confidence and all of that. And I think that's going to be more difficult in the next couple of years with game, you know, coming to be research. So I think the dual player, the issue is not that it will disimprove his game, whether it's hurling or football. The issue is really time. Is he there when you need him to rehearse key aspects of a game plan, in particular at the high level, in consideration of the team that you're going to play the next weekend?
Yeah, no, I think that's the point, the preparation now. And again, the way the two championships are run off this year, the way the leagues are condensed and the championship are condensed, there's a lot of overlapping of hurling playing the football weekend. So not even preparation, like, you're just literally not able to do both now. So we might as well, dual players are a thing of the past, which is unfortunate, because I always thought it was a lovely thing to be good enough to play at intercounty level at both.
Yeah, I think you'd have to be an exceptional player to be able to play, or to dictate things to your manager and say, look, I love to play hurling, but I want to play both. And then you need two understanding managers to allow that to happen. And there's not that many exceptional players out there that could play both. There's a lot of average good players that could attempt it, but I think the likes of Conor Callan, if he went to Jim Gavin and said, "Can I play both?" he'd be saying no. But Pat Kilroy would jump at him today. Yeah. He'd easily allow him play football and hurling if he got the chance.
Go on, Cheddar.
That's a good point, Michael. Actually, that's a really important point. Whether your county is strong in football and or hurling, the dual player will normally choose the game that he has a better chance of success in. And hence the lesser game in that county, generally speaking, suffers in the dual county. Now, in one county, that could be in hurling. In the other county, it could be football. But and generally speaking, in those counties where either of game is weaker, your number of quality players, you just don't have sufficient numbers. And then the loss of a dual player like that is really, really felt to the weaker game. So it's a very difficult nut to crack, I think. And at county level, and particularly at the top level, I'm not so sure that's going to be able to be worked anymore. Michael's right. I mean, the example he quoted here is a very good case. I'm sure that Conn would be welcomed with open arms at Dublin Hurlers.
Yeah, I don't think there's any better a doubt about that. I'd say Gilroy would give Kilkenny the free pass, and he would give Connolly and all these fellas. Now, Meath are in the Joe McDonagh Cup this year. The Joe McDonagh Cup is pretty much Leinster's second competition championship. It has Kerry, Carlow, Laois, Meath and Westmeath and Antrim in it. So they're going to play their own league, while the Leinster Championship has five teams, and that's a league. Interested to hear your thoughts on this, Cheddar, is because I've heard your thoughts on it before when you're a Laois manager and you're completely against this. The way I would look at it is Laois would be favourites to win this Joe McDonagh this year. Then they get some great games in the Leinster Championship next year, and the danger is that Laois go up, they come down, Offaly come up, and there's a swapsies between Laois and Offaly, and that's you almost play in the Leinster Championship every second weekend, every second year. But is that a bad thing, or is playing these teams at a similar level and getting loads of games a good thing?
I probably the record a good bit about this, Willie. I think there's a certain merit in playing teams at your own level on that, but there's only a certain merit in that if there's a plan underpinning that will bring you up to the next level consistently, not that you're just going up and down every year if that happens to be Laois. And I just don't see that. I just don't see any thought, and there's a real, real dangers in this. I suppose if you were to ask now at the start of this, in 3 years' time, how would you measure the success of this initiative? Is it that you have lifted the game of hurling in those five or six counties or four or five counties to a sufficient level that are going to be able to compete at the top? If that's what it is, well, you will need a serious development plan in all of those counties to improve them to up to that level. The danger really is if it goes the other way, and I'm not so sure if there's been an awful lot of thought in this. And like, if you were to ask a player in Laois or Carlow or Westmeath or anything, or in Meath, if you were even to ask James in Meath, why does he play for Meath? There's no financial reward here. There's probably loss if he's self-employed. So the only thing he plays for is the honour of playing in his county, and that can be best, I suppose, served by playing in front of, you know, a serious crowd with a decent chance in your own provincial championship, maybe in front of 10,000 people or whatever the case may be. If we go back to this, and this is now played out in front of 1,000 people or less, and it's been seen as a backwater, will the top players, who generally speaking are ambitious anyway, want to play with their county anymore, or will they just concentrate on club, or maybe the dual player will then go away and play football? Because in all of those counties, the biggest issue is the lack of volume of top quality players to be able to draw in. And if that reduces that even further, and some players walk away and they say, I can't be bothered, it's not worth the effort, it's not worth the money, and so on and so on, well, then this system is a complete failure. And I'll be surprised in 3 years' time if that's not the outturn from this. Because I was Laois manager for a number of years. I saw no consultations going on with any players. Maybe it happened in the last year, I don't know. I'd be surprised if it did. But you really need to get down to the nitty-gritty and the detail of why these players play, and then be able to come back and tell them, well, look, we're going to put you into a different type of a championship here. The main aim here is to improve hurling in your county, to make your county competitive, to be able to play at the top level. Here's how we're going to do it. Clearly set that out. And without that, I don't see it. Without that, well, I think it's just destined for failure. And to be able to tell Laois, Carlow, Meath and Westmeath that you cannot play in your own provincial championship, having played in it for the last 150 years or whatever it is, I think is an insult to those counties. And I think even if I look at my own county, Woolley, and your own county, to have the Leinster council based in the county town of Barrow County to tell us that you can't play in your provincial championship, to me, I think everybody should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, you know, that obviously is one way of looking at it. And another way of looking at it, Michael, is that if Laois win this, they'll be in it the following year when they have proved, you know, or at that level. But you're an interesting one about this, Michael, because you started with Dublin in 2003 and Dublin were at this level.
Absolutely.
So, like, I mean, you're an example of what Cheddar's talking about there, as in you played at that level, but there was a clear strategy from Dublin County Board and they got the investment they needed. And over the course of your career, you would have seen the improvements at underage level. You would have seen players coming through. And, you know, Dublin are the example that any county can get to, especially the traditional counties. And Laois would be a traditional hurling county, would have been half the county, you know, would be playing hurling, that they can get to it if, and I think that's a brilliant point by Cheddar, this is useless unless this is your league at your own level. Here's the investment to improve it and have the teams coming out of this division being able to compete in the other division.
Yeah, with the commitment you're giving inter county, it's about motivation. And if you're motivated, what's your motivation at the start of the year for them teams to win the John McDonagh Cup? What does that mean to them? Like, it's not a Leinster, it's not an All-Ireland.
But none of these teams would be able to win the Leinster.
I know, but they have every right to be in the Leinster Championship, and now they're being told you're going into this John McDonagh Cup to get to Leinster. And to me, it's very wishy-washy just to throw them to one side and say, go on, use all challenge for that, and then the following year you're going to be in the Leinster Championship, and then more than likely you might go down the following year and repeat the whole process again.
Yeah.
And how long does that go on?
This is another thing, but, like, I mean, this happens at club level. Like, I mean, at club level you've got senior, intermediate, junior A, junior B, and it works perfect. Nobody ever complains about an intermediate team not playing senior, because you have to win the intermediate, then you get into senior. And it's the same in the football championship. There's such a proposal to tiering it. So I don't know, Cheddar, why does it work so well at club level, but at inter-county level there's such kind of complaining about it?
I think it has been historic anyway. That's the legacy we've been left with. But I think there's a critical difference here. For a county like Carlow or Meath or Laois to make quantum leap to be able to play at this level would need serious input, serious resources, and, yeah, Michael is right, serious money as well to make that jump. You certainly won't make it yourself. These counties are struggling to keep their teams on the field outside of paying for a really comprehensive development plan. Like, but Dublin are the model. I fully agree with Michael. Dublin are the model. Rather than castigating Dublin for the money they're getting, we should be saying, well, look, that has been very, very successful. It was a GA initiative. It has worked really well. I work in Dublin and I know the effect it has had in Dublin, even in hurling. To see young people walking around the streets of Dublin now with hurlies in their hands, little tiny, is really, really refreshing to see. And it didn't happen by chance. Why can't that model not be used, spread across these counties and build on similar success that Dublin has had in these counties? But I don't see it. I think Michael is right. It was very much, let's separate this championship and let's just get rid of these teams for the time being into and let them play among themselves, and one of them will come up and look, they'll be going up and down for the next 4 or 5 years. There is certainly no thought put into it that I can see that's going to sustain them and build on them into the future.
Yeah, I told the two teams that finished top of the John McDonagh Cup go into the All-Ireland Series at the quarterfinal preliminary stages.
The top team goes in?
No, top team goes into Leinster, but the top two teams go
into
All-Ireland Series. So you're going to be meet the third place team of Munster and Leinster. So that's a huge step up from playing 5 games.
Yeah, but you can't complain about them not being in the championship, and then when they get back into it...
Yeah, but it's the preparation to get there. Like, they're playing each other at that standard, and then they're jumping straight to an All-Ireland Series standard, which is huge. Like, these lads have got out of Leinster to get there. It's such a huge jump in standards that they're not trained at that level, you know, they're not playing at that level. So, like, as you said, over my career, I've been beaten by Antrim and Championship, I've beaten by Laois, beaten by Westmead, and yet we pushed on. So I think, I don't know the funding in them counties, but I know we were backed by the county board through them years. And huge effort was put in underage, and it stood to us.
Yeah, no, and obviously there was, like, I mean, we talk so much about the funding Dublin got to invest in their hurling and football, and, like, I mean, you want the investment, Cheddar, but you also want that investment used properly. Dublin County Board used that money very smartly and had these plans that every other county boards don't seem to have.
There is no doubt about that, Willie. I think that's a really, really key point here. think it's PR spin, to be honest, which is to say that you can get by without proper funding. It's not the only point, but it's a key point of it. If you don't have proper funding, you cannot do what you want to do. But you are absolutely right. The detail of the plan, the quality of the people chosen to implement that plan within the county, the interaction between these counties, Board or Carlow County Board, Leinster Council and Croke Park and all of that. If that's not of absolute top quality, well then it's just bound for failure. So it's not about money, but I've heard it so many times from the GA that you know, let's not talk about money, it has to come from in the county. Yes, but without it certainly is doomed for failure, I think. And I agree with you. You know, the thought process between a provincial council, GAA headquarters and county boards is not sufficiently strong that there's a unified way of actually doing things. Everybody seems to have a finger in the pie, but nobody seems to have the overall plan of how to make something like that work. I agree with Michael, you've got to compliment Dublin and you've got to really, really look at how they did their business. And they did it internally within themselves with backup from Croke Park, with backup from Leinster Council. And look at the success they've had in hurling and football, not necessarily one sport, based purely on the level of and the quality of work that they did at underage level within their county, I would think.
Yeah, they definitely did. They went from, like Michael said, being beaten by Antrim and Westmeath to winning a Leinster in a National League. So, like, I mean, there's the proof in the pudding. Talking about finances, lads, here's another one I wanted to get your thoughts on. Is a travelling party from Wexford headed out to New York? And we know New York and America is fertile ground for the Irish over there are crazy for their Gaelic games. They've made it big in America, often in the construction trade. I know loads about it because I was over there and I've worked for these men who've made it big out there, and these fellas will pay fellas to come out during the summer. They'll also pay a lot of money for dinner dances to go and talk to current players in Ireland. So we know Kerry make a lot of money out there. We know there's other counties as well who've gotten on the bandwagon. So I was surprised to hear Wexford. Another interesting one is Roscommon actually played New York 2 years ago out there and had a dinner dance out there and cashed in on it the weekend of the match and nearly got caught against New York. But Davy Fitzgerald and Lee Chin were part of a group that went out there and they were going to raise money, obviously, because I think it was Dermot O'Keefe was saying the lads sat down a number of months ago and they discussed how they'd get a few extra pound together. So I don't know, Cheddar, like, I mean, this is a new phenomenon, because of the money that's required for preparing inter-county teams now and, you know, all that goes into it and the backroom teams and the scientific approach, that county boards simply can't fund it. So this new thing now of teams potentially travelling to New York to have a dinner dance might be a lot more common.
Yeah, I suppose just looking at the principle of it, I suppose, look, if teams want to get an extra edge, it's going to cost them money. And look, they've got to explore every angle. And I think the team themselves, you know, looking at that and doing that shows the level of ambition that they're at. And if they're prepared to roll up the sleeves and do something like that to get what they want, I think it shows. I think it reflects really well on them, to be honest with you. Look, everybody knows that the money is going into the preparation of the team and trying to seek out the little angle that will make you a better team and improve your team. It's not as if players are going out there to get paid for you know, playing the game or anything like that. So I don't have a difficulty with it. I'd probably compliment the teams for organising themselves and getting sorted like that. It is very difficult, very, very expensive now to run teams at a very high level. And look, you've got to actually look at county boards as well. In most instances, you know, there are volunteer people doing the best that can to try and raise the proper funding for these. So it's not easy to do this. And I certainly compliment anywhere where you can gain an edge. I think if there's any of our counties were doing it, you know, we wouldn't be disagreeing with it, provided, of course, that the money is spent in the right way and that it is to improve players, to be better players in your county, to be a better team.
Yeah, it seems to be into the training funds and stuff, Michael. The thing I have about this, it's okay for the Kerry to head out there with Jack O'Shea and the Bomber and all these legends. Leash might not have all those All-Ireland medals that will fill out banquets and stuff. So I see it for Kerry an unfair advantage. I think Davy Fitzgerald and Lee Chin, I think a lot of counties, their current captain and manager could potentially go out there and be guests of honour at these nights, and I think that's achievable for every county.
Yeah, if it's pulling power, like, they're two huge names in GAA.
Well, they are, yeah.
I don't know how, as you said, if Laois or Westmeath, would they get the money if they went over? I don't know, it's a different question, but like when I started in 2003, I was lucky, we had one manager, two selectors, and we were lucky to have a physio. But now backroom teams are over like 10, 11, 12, you've so many dietitians and kit men and selectors and video analysis. It's just so huge, and you can understand why county boards can't fund all this all year. And if you can make a few bob quickly over in America, I'm all for it.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. Cheddar, just on that, would there have been things, you don't have to go into it or the finances of it, would there have been things that you wanted to have with Laois at the time and county board say, sorry, Cheddar, we don't have the money for that, and that would have left you really frustrated?
Look, there would have been, and there would be limitations on that. But, you know, nothing that wasn't properly explainable and all of that. Incidentally, Michael, I think the Laois representative that we're going over would be Woolley himself there. I think he'd be an ideal Laois representative going over there. No, go back to your point.
Me and you, Cheddar. Me, you and Hughie Emerson could go over.
We mightn't come back to that.
You'd spend it all over there.
No, look... On a serious note, it's not a bottomless pit of money that county boards have, and particularly county boards, you know, where there may not be a huge amount of industry in that county or a huge amount of industry headquarters in that county that you can actually draw on. So you've got to work with what you have and that. And look, if you had double the money, what would you use it for? You've got to be careful with money as well. It's hard earned, and a lot of people work, a lot of volunteers and clubs and all of that work really hard to raise money for county teams and that. So you've got to recognise that there is a limit to what you can do, and you've got to accept that. Sometimes you'll be very, very frustrated in that, but when it's explained to you, you know, you've just got to take that in the chin and maybe find another way of doing things.
Yeah, okay, no, that's fair enough. I definitely think it's something that we'll be seeing more of. Michael Ryan had some comments about Davy Fitz, lads, and I don't know if he's right or wrong, because he says, I don't think we give Davy enough credit for what he's actually doing. And I'm just wondering, like, in my opinion, is while a lot of his antics I can't stand, Michael, like, I don't think there's any doubt out there that he gets a lot of credit for being a brilliant manager. Is that fair? Or is there, like, does some of his antics overshadow what a brilliant manager he is?
No, some of them do, but I think everyone in the hurling public think he's a great manager. He's done great things at every team he's been at.
His record is sensational.
Really,
like,
good.
With Waterford,
really good.
With Clare, yeah. With Wexford now, and yeah. With the colleges,
yeah.
As well.
Yeah, yeah, it's been brilliant. Everywhere he's gone, he's a great record. It's burnout, I think, is the issue for me. Like, he doesn't be there too long, and players, when he leaves, they're not the same team then. They drop. And I don't know if that's because they're tired and they've overtrained for 3 years, or this is because Davey's left. But that seems to be an issue with Davey. Everywhere he goes, it's short, it's really good, and then he's gone.
Yeah.
And what's he leaving behind? You know, so you hear all the rumours about all the heavy training they've all done, Wexford are doing at the moment, and the teams he's had in the past. And does it affect the lads after? Can you only do that for 2 or 3 years? And that's why he's gone.
Yeah.
He knows the effect it's having on players' bodies. So it's an interesting one. I think he's brilliant. He's brilliant when he goes in. But it's just what's he leaving behind for the next manager? Is it a lot of dead legs and injuries, and players are gone then after that? So it's burnout's the issue for me for Davey. He's the question mark over him.
Yeah, Cheddar. He does ask for a huge commitment. Like, the Wexford fellas now are absolutely flying it. And I remember Lee Chin told us here on the podcast last year, I says, what was the main thing Davey identified from Wexford that, you know, you were falling short on, that he wanted to fix? And he says, work rate. He said, we weren't working hard enough. That's Davey's mantra, work rate. And for work rate, we know you have to be fit. You have to be fit. So I suppose that's Davey's starting point. We know tactically he's very good as well, Cheddar.
Yeah, I suppose that's the point I was going to come to there, really. Like, I think he deserves huge credit. I think it's very, very difficult. Think of when he went into Waterford. He went in the middle of the year with a different game plan. Just think how hard it is to convince a lot of hardened individuals in that team to change the way they were hurling. And when they did that, to do it with confidence and get to an All-Ireland. Mightn't have performed in the All-Ireland, but just in terms of that process, behaviour change is very, very difficult to implement. And you've got to give him fierce credit for what he actually does. And you're right. He demands a huge intensity of and work rate and all of that, but I think that hides a little bit of his tactical acumen as well. And even if you just look at, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, the last score to win the draw in All-Ireland the Saturday night against Cork, the puck out strategy, and that was straight out of a Davey copybook, because I think we might have played him earlier on in the year down in Ennis, and their puck out strategy was to the other wing, to Brendan Bugger, one puck out, one distribution strike into the scoring area and a score, almost replicated with the winning score in All-Ireland. So he brings a lot of technical new to the game. There's much more to Davey than what you see in the sideline and his antics and that. And I suppose even and I agree with Michael, he can polarise people, but probably if you take a step back from that, you would say, you know, what is it that polarizes people? Is it his single-mindedness in what he wants? He doesn't take any backward steps. He's just so focused on his own team, doesn't really care about anything else or anybody else. To be honest with you, that's probably what we'd all look for in our own managers. And, yeah. You know, so I think when you take that on board, I think he's just been really, really good. And look, he's brought a great, I don't know, excitement to hurling and all of that as well. You know, whether people want to have a go off him or vice versa or whatever. And I think the other point about him is this. He went almost from playing into managing teams. He had to learn on the job at a very, very high level. And look, that's very, very difficult to do, to know what makes teams tick and all of that. And so he actually learned that at a very, very high level. And he has done it in Waterford. He's won an All-Ireland with Clare. And, you know, Michael can explain much better than I can how difficult it is to get over that final yard to win the really, really big games. To get up the hill it might be the easy part. Just to get that final 1-2% to get you over the line against the big teams is very, very difficult. And he's done it with Clare in Ireland, he's done it with LIT if it's given. So I don't know whether we don't give him enough credit or not, but we should give him plenty of credit for what he's achieved and welcome with open arms and hope that he stays in hurling for as long as he can.
Yeah, okay, I think we'll all agree on that. I kind of do have a bit of a love-hate relationship with Davey. I was going to talk about Ronan Maher being a professional hurler. We might get to a bit of that when we look ahead to the matches at the weekend, but we want to talk to James Toher next.
It's tough. I won't tell you, there's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough. I won't tell you. But again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We waited so long. I know I've seen one of your tweets yesterday. It said 6 years. It's obviously a leash, man, but it's a long 6 years for us there, and we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after Leinster final, I was just through the morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was baking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid, and he fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
All right, delighted to say Meath's James Toher is on the line now ahead of the game against Westmeath on Saturday night. Westmeath in Division 2A, a top of the table clash, James. That must be a nice place to be.
Yeah, I suppose if you were to offer us, you know, top of the league after two games at the beginning of the year, we would have taken the arm off you. So, you know, if whoever wins Saturday, it'll be have kind of one foot in the final, or at least be sniffing around in the final. So it's a big game, obviously, with me. There wouldn't be a whole lot of love lost between the two of us at the best of times. So when there's a final, or at least a sniff of a final place, there should be a bit of venom.
Yeah, talk to us about that no love loss, because I'd be more aware of it in football. It transfers across to the hurling as well.
Yeah, it just probably comes from underage. We would have been, well, my age anyway, would have been in a good few finals against us. Meath, they probably came out on top maybe a couple more times than we would have liked. But any time we played them in a challenge game, there would be a few late hits or a few few words exchanged that wouldn't be too nice. So I don't know what it is. It just seems to be inherited into the team. And, you know, every team has their rivals. It's not like we would see each other every week or, you know, every year in Championship League, but whenever we do come across each other, there seems to be a bit of bite for some reason.
Right, okay.
Seems so the culture that's
yeah,
there.
Maybe it's not that you're rivals, as in county rivals, it's just you've come up through the years playing each other and it's developed there rather than just being neighbourly rivals.
Yeah, I think it's nearly kind of like a parish, you know, the neighbour and parish kind of the mentality is, you know, we're better than you and they think they're better than us, or that kind of a, you know, and when one team is on top, we tend to let each other know about it, kind of thing. So it probably does stem from the underage rivals growing up and probably losing more or winning more. There's a sense of entitlements knocking around probably the teams that is maybe a little bit insulting. That probably drives a bit of aggression into the game too.
Yeah, so you've had huge improvement in Meath hurling, really, since Martin Ennis took over and then stepped down. We might get to that in a minute, but under his management, you won the Keogh Cup, you won the Christy Ring Cup. Obviously, we might talk about that as well. That was, you know, crazy stuff. You had to win it twice. and you got promoted into Division 2A, and you also competed in the Leinster Championship and beat Kerry. So, like, I mean, is that improvement down to Martin Ennis, or is this a group of Meath players coming through and it was going to happen for someone?
I probably a combination of a lot of things, to be honest, because Killian Farrell came in before Martin's time, and he cleared out a lot of the older players, which was a big call at the time, because there was a good few names on the team back then, you know, probably 6 or 7 years ago, that people would have assumed to be, you know, the, I suppose, the top players in the county. Killian wanted to go a youth, and he brought in probably 7 or 8 of our kind of a squad that's the core of the team now, and probably bred into us a level of professionalism that probably may not have been there before in Meath hurling. And then obviously he brought us to a certain step. You know, he was left with a lot to do on his own, and I suppose he did 4 years, I think, and he did, I think we got the 3 league finals, but always fell short through a combination of maybe our own performance in the final or a bit of bad luck as well, you know. But then Martin came in, and first year wasn't what we hoped it would have been, and then Mickey McCullough came in with him, and in fairness, things did up a gear again. And you know, with the players and the amount of years of experience that they had whilst being young and hungry and enough in the professionalism, I suppose, was bound to pay dividends at some stage.
Okay.
You know, you can only knock on the door so many times before it eventually opens, you know.
Right, so you would say Mickey McCullough, did he come in as a team trainer or coach, or you know, the improvement?
He was a coach, yeah. So right. Martin was the manager and Mickey came in as a coach, and you know, there's probably a bit of drama and controversy around myself and then boys, but you know, in fairness, you know, we did win a league and a championship, so you know, we'll leave it there.
Yeah, well that's why I was going to ask you about that, because you were the captain. You captained the Meath to the Christy Ring twice. I want to talk to you about that in a minute, because you would have had to make the same speech over the second time. But like, I mean, yeah. How do you look back on that time with Martin then? Because it did end messy, and like, I mean, it was messy, it was played out in public, and it was also seemed to be one side blaming the other and the other doing the opposite thing.
I suppose, well, all the drama happened after the hype and the excitement of the Christy Ring, so at least that's not tarnished, you know what I mean?
Because yeah, yeah.
It's obviously a very special memory, you know. You never think you'd walk up the steps of Croke Park as a Meath hurler, and never mind walk up the steps twice, you know what I mean? So it's kind of I kind of separated that memory, I suppose, in my mind, and try to keep it as a sweet memory instead of, you know, was there something else going on? And I was, at the time there wasn't, but look, I don't really know how to talk about it without dragging up a lot of stuff again. It was fairly controversial down here at the time. It was all over the place, and look, it's fairly well documented what I think and what happened. So you know, the team, I suppose, at the moment is in a fairly sensitive position. You know, I probably would like to avoid any more drama by bringing it back up again, because any distractions in camp or, you know, can you know, might cost you a point or two, and it could be the point or two that we'll lose you the game, you know what I mean? So, I know what you're trying to say and that kind of thing, but I would personally just try to avoid any more stuff that, you know, has since settled.
Yeah, no, and we'll leave that all together then, because I suppose it is last year's news. You did make an interesting comment about being a dual player, and we talked about it at the top of the show, and it was that being a dual player actually improves you. I often feel better when I'm playing both hurling and football, that they complement each other, and that the hurling gives you the quick hands and the football gives you the physicality. Like, I mean, like Cheddar was talking about this at the top of the show, and he said that he would agree with all that, he wouldn't have any problem with all that, but the problem with dual players now is the level of preparation goes in for both, like on puck out strategies and all these different things, that if you're a dual player you're missing out on too much of that stuff.
Yeah, I know, but like, in my opinion, there is space for a dual player, but the way the fixtures are, it's impossible. Like, that's why I had to leave the football squad this year because four out of the five league games and the first round of championship clashed
directly
with the hurling. Like, but I do maintain that, well, for me anyway, like, the hurling is very emotional and aggressive, and you're just kind of let loose on the field, you know, you're kind of wound up, and it's hard not to get emotionally invested in the game when something happens, you know, you kind of, there's some form of primal instinct that nearly takes over. But the football is an awful lot more calculated and logical and tactics and systems and that kind of thing. But you're not going to get anywhere if you can't run in football, basically, you know. Yeah. you're nearly built to be a machine. So, like, the hurling gives you an emotion that kind of takes over, and probably you go with your first instinct, and the football gives you a physical edge, I believe. So it's hard to describe, but I definitely found, even when I go back to club, that, you know, your quickness in both games and cuteness in both games benefits from the two. You know, I know people like to be a specialist in one or the other, but there's definitely trade-offs, and I think the trade-offs would be worthwhile. It's a pity more players maybe don't try to do it and force to do that into maybe changing fixtures or something to make it a little bit more accommodating, because at the moment it's impossible to do the both.
Yeah, you're a dying breed, really, and even you're a dying breed even saying that you can do both. It's gone to that stage. I think Podge Collins and Aidan Walsh, they had one bad year doing one, and now the idea is that it's impossible and you can't do it.
Well, yeah, it is. I won't lie, like, it's totally, it consumes your entire life. Like, for the majority of pre-season last year and at the beginning of this year, I was training 7 nights a week. Like,
yeah.
So you'd have 5 pitch sessions and 2 pitch sessions. And, you know, although the hurling, I was doing all the physical stuff with the football and that kind of thing, and you go to the hurling for the hurling sessions, where, you know, you'd avoid their running sessions because you're doing it with the football. But even the hurling sessions, you know, you're running, you're taking hits, you're doing drills at speed. So it's not like you're getting a rest day where the other team that you're training for, them boys are getting a rest on their legs, you know. So
yeah.
I won't lie, it is totally consuming, and your recovery is out the window, and, you know, you tend to get heavy legged and stuff. But, you know, when you want something bad enough, you usually find a way to do it. So I was definitely willing until the fixtures came out to just put the body through whatever I needed to get through to play both. Like,
yeah, and there's no chance now. Come here, talk to us about the new management team. The new manager is Nick Fitzgerald, who's come in this year since Martin Ennis stepped down. But no disrespect to Nick, who's the manager, but he's the B-side of the draw considering who he's brought in with him. So Martin Comerford and Michael Kavanagh, who have more All-Irelands than God knows who for a duo, have maybe 16, 17 All-Irelands between them. They're in, so that must be a huge kind of boost to the squad.
Oh yeah, sure. With the experience that they have, not only are they going to be listened to, they're going to be respected, you know, and whoever they put their name beside that, they're going to look at you in a different light too. So, you know, Nick is a very clever man, you know, he's very businesslike. He knew exactly what he was doing with the team he was bringing in, you know, and the two Kilkenny boys are, you know, it's not necessarily the drills or anything like that are overly complicated, or it's nothing magical that, you know, Kilkenny were doing. It's just the expectation of what is now good has moved up a level. You know, everything is about getting faster, cleaner, more clinical, and you become a bit more, I suppose, you set what's the standard of okay is now not good enough, and what's good is only okay.
Right.
So it's more the expectation that they bring with them to be a top level player has gone up now. So it's not things we have never seen before, but it's definitely the air of enthusiasm and expectation that they've brought that has brought us on a bit.
Yeah, so looking from the outside of it, Michael would take the backs and Martin would take the forwards in training. Is that the way it works out? Like, are they hands-on coaches? I presume they are.
Oh, they are, yeah. They do the majority of sessions. Paul Riley would do the odd one, and Nick might do the odd one too, and Kieran McDonough, who's our physical coach, he'd do all the physical aspects and strength and conditioning and stuff. But it's kind of funny, Michael and Martin will be two different characters. Michael will be cool, calm, collected and timing and stuff, and Martin will be very emotional and you know, we get it done right kind of thing, you know.
Right.
But they're not afraid to crack the whip at any stage, you know, if things aren't going the way they should be going, they're the first lads to make you aware of it, you know. So
yeah. Yeah, I suppose, and players like that that have won everything come in and tell you that you are good enough. Like I'm thinking back to Mick O'Dwyer telling us that we didn't believe in ourselves and we're better than we were. Him telling us that instead of a Laois manager, no disrespect, who hasn't done it, like it's just chalk and cheese.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it carries more weight. Like I played for centre back there for a good few years, so like it's very interesting to see Michael's philosophy on how to defend too. You know, it's there, you know, Martin is obviously an attacker and Michael is a defender, so like even the way they put their games and their tactics is slightly different, and I think it's very beneficial to us to hear the two of them bounce off each other about what way they would go about it, you know, because you know what works for one mightn't work for the other, so there's a variety of options for, you know, what way it'll work best for the individual, you know, and whenever they do have a quiet word with you, you know, you're not going to just pass it off, you're going to, you know, take it as gospel.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, I saw a quote from you saying parts of Meath are diehard hurling. It's all out hurling. How big is the hurling community in Meath? Like, I mean, how big a pick are we talking about that you have to pick from? Because we were mentioning on the show earlier on, like, Laois would be nearly 50-50. South Laois would be all hurling. So it would be kind of a traditional county. Like, how big is the hurling community in Meath?
It's like obviously it's a football dominated county, but you do have clubs like Kiltale, Kilmessan, Kildare. Trim is a dual club, but you know at the moment it seems, you know, it probably will be 50-50 hurling and football wise, but there's probably a core in around Trim of clubs that are neighbouring that would be, you know, hurling is priority, you know, somebody right. wouldn't even play a football championship and stuff until hurling is over. It's just kind of funny how you know, people ask you, you know, where do you hurl? And they might say Meath, or everyone says, did you Meath play hurling? It was kind of the attitude over the years, you know. So I know that we would be totally considered, you know, a dominant football county, but it's not really the case. You would have a lot of places like Rathote and Ashburn and Dunboyne and kind of clubs near Dublin that would be nearly all of football, and hurling is kind of nearly a by the way. But you would have some real country, typical village, you know, they don't care about anything bigger than a flitters, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Like, they've done well outside when they, like, Kiltale, Kilmessan and Kildare have all done well when they won the county championship in Meath, in Leinster. You know, Kiltale have lost two or three Leinster finals. Kilmessan have done really well as well when they came out a few years ago too. So it's not like, you know, the clubs in Meath are overly, you know, behind the scenes with other counties like Laois, you're obviously when it comes to club level.
Yeah, and how are you treated by the county board? Like, I mean, is it 50-50 or are the hurlers the poor relation? I'm sure Comerford and Kavanagh coming in would help redress that balance if that was the case.
I'd say probably when I first started playing, when I was 18 or 19, when I was at the senior panel, I probably wouldn't have known any different about what county players were entitled to or what was necessary to make it a bit easier on the player. But I became a rep pretty soon after joining the panel of the GPA, and obviously they make you totally aware about, you know, everything from player welfare to gear to mileage to everything to make life a little bit easier going training. And I suppose I picked up fairly quickly that Meath's hurlers were a good bit behind where we should have been. Whether that was intended or not, I don't know, but it just seems to be accepted. And I probably had a good few rows with the county board over those kind of issues, but thankfully in the last year or two things have dramatically changed. Still can be better, of course, but you know, with I'm sure, you know, Nick got the exact management he wanted around him, so, and all the expenses and stuff like that, is there's no issue. Like, so I would say there's been a dramatic change in investment, you know, and Larry McGowan from Unifood came in as well, and you know, he had pumped money into the team. And to be honest, I don't think without the likes of Larry McGowan and the people pushing me in the last couple of years, we wouldn't have won the Christy Ring and be up in 2A now and be in Tier 2 for this year. So there's been a dramatic change in the last two or three years for the good. Thanks be to God.
Yeah, come here. I want to finish up asking you about that Christy Ring then. So you'd never been in the Christy Ring final before. You won the final, you thought. You went up, collected the cup, you made a speech. comes out 3 days later then that the game was a draw. Talk to us about that, because like you went, obviously went away and celebrated it, and you didn't know it was a draw until 3 days, or were the panel kind of talking amongst each other, geez, I'm not sure if that scoreline's right, or what way did it work?
Well, it's kind of funny, because what apparently happened during the game, obviously we were oblivious to this on the pitch, but as far as we were aware, we were a pint up with about a minute to go, and I had a free on the halfway line or 65 or somewhere, and I was just kind of saying hit the ball as hard as you can, and then you kind of got worse in the line as well, just kill the ball, the game is over kind of thing. So I just drove the ball, I'd say 20 yards wide, they took the puck out, game was blown up, we thought we won, so we thought it was the right decision. And then there was kind of mutterings how like the scoreboard was wrong, and then it's like, no, the scoreboard's right, and the Meath line checked during the game, before the game was over, that asked the linesman to ask the referee, is that the right score, because T.G. Cahir has it as a different score, and the word came back to the line that no, the ref has the right score, we're okay, T.G. Cahir has it wrong. So we were like, grand, so the whole thing is done, they won obviously, and we were celebrating hard enough for the day that was in it, but we're still kind of, there was people muttering to us, and we were all kind of saying, no, it's totally wrong, we're grand, everything is rosy. And then 2 or 3 days later, I kind of picked up a bit of momentum, and Croke Park turned around and said you had to replay the game, and you know, we were kind of, and they wanted to play it that weekend, and you know, we were saying absolutely no way, physically and mentally you would not be okay 7 days later.
Because you've
after
been, did you go off celebrating?
On the beer for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, you went on the beer for.
Oh yeah, so we were 3 or 4 days. Yeah, sure. That's just the way it is. Like, sure, it was total. As far as we knew, it was total nonsense. Like, everyone's kind of half saying it to you, but they were asking you what's happening, and we were saying no, it's over with. Like, you know, and thing. Obviously we got word from Croke Park, and you know, I was left dealing with some of the stuff about venues, and you know, they wanted to put us in Newry, and I said to Croke Park, no way, like it has to be Croke Park or nothing, because to be honest, it was a bit of an insult throwing us up there, and not only do you want to do it 7 days later, you want to put us up in the middle of nowhere, like beside Antrim.
James,
the whole kind of,
How can you miss a point in a match? Like, I know hurling's a lot higher scoring than football, but I would have been watching that scoreboard like a maniac during a match. Like, I would have been able to account for nearly every score that went over.
Yeah, I think it was something to do when Antrim got a score and we got the point on the scoreboard.
Right.
That's what apparently what happened. But, you know, there, as far, like, I'd say if it was to happen again, I would still maintain that whatever the ref says at the end of the game should be what goes.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't think, obviously it worked out great for us in the end, and although, you know, a lot of the, maybe some of the management and that kind of were against the replay, it was probably the best thing we could have done, because it was always going to be the All-Ireland, you never won if you didn't, you know, agree to replay the game, and thankfully it worked out. But I still maintain, like, if a team was to lose or win a game at a club level and the referee said that was the score, I don't think there'd be a whole lot of issue about replaying the game if it was a club game. So it really shouldn't be any different for a county game, regardless of a final or not.
Well, the county game's on television, so there's proof of it. Like, I mean, you've nothing else to go on in a club game. Do you know what I mean? But look, I don't know what you're complaining about anyways, because you won two Christy rings now and you celebrated two, so it's it's fairy tale stuff. You went, so you would have done the same. Did you make the exact same speech the second time, and did you celebrate it just as much the second time?
I just kind of went up. I'd be fairly superstitious about certain things, and one of the things was you never tempt fate, you know, speeches, and you know, so I kind of just went up blank, and the first time I just said whatever came into my head, the second time I was trying to I was kind of blank there for 15 or 20 seconds just because of everything that happened again, and I couldn't believe it was as dramatic as it was, and the fact that Tippy got the last score, and there was, you know, better man, and with the moment I was in of his career and that kind of thing, and it was just very emotional. And anyone that says that you walk up the steps and they're calm and collected is lying to you, because you know it's not something that you could ever get used to. If you walked up 15 times, I still think you get a tear in your eye, and with all the people roaring and bawling, that, you know, you kind of lose yourself in the moment. So the speech may have been similar, to be honest. I don't really know what I said both times. I tried to thank as many people as we could to get in that situation, but let the crowd know that it was a tough journey mentally.
Yeah.
So you kind of laugh when you hear people that give out or talk about the mental strain on GAA players when they have to replay a final. You know, and I used to say, like, sure, what's the problem? Like, you get to play in Croke Park again in an Ireland final, but it does sap every bit of energy out of your body for a moment like that, because you're building so much towards it. And then once you have it done, you think that it's that one-off game, and then you find out you have to do it again. So at the moment, I couldn't tell you what I said. Okay.
Well, listen, it's an absolutely brilliant story. There's no doubt about that. It worked out so well for you in the end. It would have been a disaster, especially, like you said, when you had that free that could have been to win it. And, you know, it just would have been very messy if you hadn't won the second one. But listen, we've gone way over time there. Thanks for keeping us for as long as you have. And best of luck on Saturday night, James.
Cheers, Colin. Thanks a million. Thanks.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we had a couple of filly donkeys. So I brought them down, and so we actually sold them to. I think we had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkeys from there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
They call it. Yeah, you see them on the beaches, never. And so you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, a donkey in Eden Palace.
Yeah, lads, I want to do a little bit of bragging here, Michael, because you were here with me when we previewed the league, and I made this call that because of the new structure of the hurling championship, that because you play a league and then you have a break for clubs and then you have to have another league, and the Leinster Munster Championship is being played as leagues, I said the National League as it is might become more secondary and managers won't care about it as much. And I think I've been proven right, because you look at comments from Derek McGrath, from Michael Ryan, from Brian Cody. Now, while they all want their teams to go out and win, there's no disappointment after the game. It's all like, ah, sure, look, you know, we're just trying things out. These are winning managers that, I don't know, just looking from the outside, don't in their interviews seem awfully bothered that they're losing National League games.
Yeah, for public perception, you're right, Willie. They're definitely showing that, well, they're saying things that they don't really mind losing. Now, I can't see Brian Cody not minding losing in that dressing room.
In I don't private. Think they're not saying they don't mind. They just don't look too fussed about it.
Huge emphasis on it, yeah. They're all trying, so many players throughout the league. They're really trying to find their feet and find the players for championship. I agree. Personally, I'd be pushing on to try and win it. I think they all will, in their own dressing rooms, be saying that to the players. It's not really shown with all the changes they're making in some teams, but it's about preparation for championship. Like, if you had to pick between winning a league and winning a championship, there's only one winner there. And I think you're right, they're trying to find teams at the moment to be challenging for the All-Ireland.
Yeah, but this is the thing, but this was never the way in hurling. The league, Cheddar, was always, like the last 3 or 4 years, it was so competitive, and all the talk was we don't want to get relegated, we need these big matches. Like, that talk is all gone now.
It might play out differently, Willie, but I do agree with you. The league in the last couple of years has certainly been the far and away the best league competition I've seen in my time, and some of the matches were absolute brilliant games. But I think the fact that you're going to play a lot more championship games this year has maybe changed the focus on managers in a way. And I think what they're saying publicly is a little bit different than what they're actually planning for, because if you look at the Derricks and all of these managers, they're very, very intelligent people doing ferocious amount of pre-planning, looking forward and planning for the future, not necessarily for the next game. But really what they're looking at is, we need greater strength and depth of our panels to be able to cater for a play in week on week in championship, because they're going to come thick and fast and they're going to be top class games. And the other angle to that is, Derrick's going to bring something new to a Waterford team to try and win an All-Ireland if you can. And the best way you can do that is if you can unearth one further player to do something different, to raise his team that 1%, that's what he'll do. And the only way he'll do it is by actually finding out in top-class league games, sort of playing good teams, has this player got the capability to be able to do this for me, and what does he have in his belly to be able to do this? So I think what the managers are really saying is, we want to progress our teams, we want to improve our teams, here's how we're going to do it, and you'll see the results of that in the league championship, as you call it, Willie.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll reduce certainly at the top level, the league games any less. Because I can tell you, player 20 to 25 in Waterford, Tipperary or Limerick are still absolutely fantastic players, and they're going to bring maybe a little bit more freshness and that to the games. I don't think the quality of the games will drop that much, to be honest with you, although you may not see what people would perceive as our first 15 out every day.
Yeah, okay, and I think that's fair enough. It's definitely always, I remember Derek McGrath last year, he was absolutely panicked about getting relegated, where now this year he's kind of saying, if we're relegated, so be it, there's a bigger picture. And I honestly think it's because this is the very first year managers have had to deal with this new kind of structure, and the championship being a league. So we've two leagues now. Mm. But the big, fairly interesting game in Division 1B. Go on, Cheddar.
I think there's two other points on that. I think you've got to bear in mind that the league winners came from Division 2 in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And I think the other point that you need to look at is that the Fitzgibbon Cup Championship sort of clashes nearly almost directly with the league now. And your top players, if you look at the UL team, they're all inter-county players. So you're not going to have them during these weeks of the league. So if that's the case, you might have a different view than what you want out of those matches. And I think there are two sort of key points, particularly the Fitzgibbon competition. Clashing directly now with the league is a key point that top-class managers will be looking at. We may not have all our players. Let's get something out of this game that we might not have got if we had them.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we spoke here on the podcast about Limerick and the situation they're in. And they have Napiershig, obviously. They're being punished because Napiershig are going well. And Napiershig are such a strong club that they could have five starters on the Limerick team. They also had 17 fellas involved in Fitzgibbon. Now that would dwindle as the Fitzgibbon would become knockout. Yeah. But like, I mean, Limerick are really interesting. They're playing Dublin at the weekend, and this is a really, really big game in 1B, because, like, I mean, whoever loses, if Dublin lose this, they're completely out of the picture. If Limerick lose it, they're probably under pressure to go up, because Galway will, you'd imagine, will be going up. But Limerick are an interesting team, because they won the All-Ireland Under 21 in 15 and 17, and they seem to be a team to me that are constantly in transition. They've been in transition for maybe 3 years now, and just looking at their team, they've played the same team in the first two league games. They've beaten Offaly well and they've beaten Laois well, and it's like the first bit of continuity maybe they've had in a long time, because of that team, only seven played in the championship last year. So there's the turnover. Like, you've Declan Hannan, Graham Mulcahy, William O'Mara, who have been injured, Kyle Hayes' long term injury, Barry Nash is, Darragh Donovan got injured last year, then you have lads that have retired, you know what I mean? Like, there constantly seems to be upheaval there, Cheddar, and not really. I just think Kiley is really struggling to have everybody so that he can find that formula, and it's not through no fault of his own. And like you said, all that preparation, puck outs, and all these jobs that goes into managing now, he doesn't seem to have that full hand all the time.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that, Willie. I think John will bring a lot to Limerick, but it's very, very difficult for him to be missing half his team or nearly his full team. And like, the pressure in Limerick to win is massive. And, you know, regardless of who you are, look, the light's going to be shining on the manager if you've lost a couple of games. And if you lose a game, probably one game, or definitely two games in Division 2, you're not going up. And, look, that would be for Limerick to go up to Division 1. They have a huge amount of top-class young players. You look at the Fitzgibbon Cup teams and you'll see how many players are there. But if you don't have them to be able to weld that into a team position-wise and into a game plan for the team, then it's very, very difficult to do. And then pressure comes on the team and pressure comes on the manager. Small little things like that then can sort of eat away at your confidence and at the team's confidence. And they're very, very small. They're very small little bits, but if there's enough of them together, they can really capsize you very quickly. They have huge potential, and probably at this minute, probably with the most potential to really make a mark on the All-Ireland Championship. But that's really dependent if he gets everybody together and gets everybody pulling in the one direction.
Yeah, so they're down to the bare bones, like I said, with all the people out. And I think there was seven of the team against Offaly and Laois that have come through that 2015 and 17 under 21. So there's a lot of young players. But like, I mean, look, I'm not a hurling person like you and Cheddar are. So I'm looking in from the outside, and I just see like, I know a lot of Limerick players, and next minute I see another team, and I'm like, who are all these fellas? But this seems to have been going on for a long time.
Yeah, I think they have to learn from their previous mistakes. They won the under 21 All Ireland in 2001, 2002, and never progressed from that. Like, you win the under 21 All Ireland three times in a row, you want to have some serious players coming through, and they never went pushed on and won an All Ireland from that. Now, did some great players come through, but never, they won a Munster, a few Munsters, but never an All Ireland. So now they've won one in 2015, 2017, they'll have a really good team this year. They want to learn from their mistakes, and why didn't these players progress like they should have? And like, someone's going to have to really, really look hard at that. I think this weekend is a huge game for Limerick. I think they're stuck down there for over 6 years in 1B, and it's not working for them. It has worked for Galway and it has worked for Clare. It's obviously not working for Limerick. I think they'll have a huge emphasis on coming up this year.
Yeah, no, I definitely think they will. It's just like, I mean, when you think of Limerick, are they good enough? Like, I mean, we saw Clare win at underage and come up and win in All-Ireland. Like, are we looking at Limerick, Cheddar, being a coming force? Or are we looking at Limerick going, they're a good team, you know, and they'll come up and they'll compete like they've always done? Like, are they a coming force that could potentially win in All-Ireland?
They definitely are, and they definitely have the potential to win in All-Ireland. They have some big game players, and they've got real quality right throughout their team. But I'm probably going back to the point that I made earlier on about Davy. You know, there's a number of counties that actually have that and get within touching distance of winning an All-Ireland and don't. And it's that extra small percent to get you over the line that is very, very hard to find at that level. So I think they are definitely in the mix. It may not happen this year. It may take a 2-year term to really blend everybody together and to find out what your best team is to play in the best way that they can. But they definitely have the potential to do that. And, you know, you'd probably say that hurling people would like to see Limerick make that breakthrough. In, you know, 73, I was actually at the All-Ireland in 73 when they won it, and I was probably at every All-Ireland that they've played in, and they bring a huge amount of energy and freshness to an All-Ireland championship. To get anywhere near an All-Ireland at all, there's a huge following for them, and I think all hurling people, if they make that breakthrough, would love to see it actually happen. But you've got to make it happen, and I think Michael makes a really, really good point. You've got to look at, if they won three All-Irelands in under-21s with really, really good teams, not dissimilar to the minute, with some individually and technically gifted players, but most of those players didn't deliver on their promise. And you've got to really ask why. Was there some reason, even, you know, post the under-21, that those players didn't develop into the leaders to grab them by the scruff of the neck and get them over the line? Why did that not happen? Because you cannot make the same mistake a second time with another bunch of class players.
Yeah, look, hopefully they've learned from the lesson. Suppose that team you're talking about, they did get to one final, didn't they? Kilkenny beat them well, or they beat Waterford. It broke my heart beating Waterford in the semi-final. Yeah. I remember that, and that was a lot of those lads that came through. Shocking seeing all these lads.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned blending a team together there, Cheddar, and that makes a really good point, and it's something that Michael Ryan was saying about Dan McCormack, who plays wing forward for Tipperary. And it's difficult to analyse Tipperary in the league because you wonder how mad up for it. I think they might have learnt their lessons last year by, you know, going flat out at it and then going through a lull. But Michael Ryan doesn't seem overly fussed when they lose. He seems to be very magnanimous. He's like, yeah, well, you know, whatever. We know he's a hard individual and a winner. It's unusual to see these lads talk like this. But you're talking about Dan McCormack, and he seemed to be the missing link with Tipperary when he took over Tipperary. He identified, which was glaringly obvious, of ball winning half forward, and he was saying that we never appreciated Declan Ryan when we had him wing forward. And just talking about, you mentioned the blend with Limerick, how important that blend is. And I always think when a blend, it's always in the forwards, that you need the blend of scoring forwards, workers, and if it's a case of leaving a scoring forward on the bench because you need something better. And I think that's what Tipperary do with Dan McCormack playing wing forward. That's what has to be done sometimes.
There's no doubt about that. That's the real trick, I suppose, of getting your right team in the right positions to be able to play the game plan that you want to play, and obviously with an eye on the opposition as well about what they're doing. And look, if you look at hurling, even throughout the last 20 or 30 years. It all depends on the type of players you have around you. If you are very, very skillful, you will not win in All-Ireland with six ball-playing forwards. You will need somebody there to make things happen for those players. And Dan McCormack definitely brings that to the team. Even Michael looked at Dublin. You know, Conor Keeney had that effect on Dublin for a long, long time. A goalkeeper could just knock the ball out high and Conor would probably catch 80% of that possession and start up an attack right down the throat of the opposition. So Michael has obviously won All-Ireland, is very, very close. I mean, that team is an exceptional team with some exceptional hurlers. But he's just looking for that little X factor to fit into the way he plays to make things really happen for that team. And probably if you step back a little bit and look at the John Powers in previous years, and I even step back further into Kenny and look at the likes of the Patelanis, they may not have been the marquee type hurlers in those teams, but they certainly were the most important. And even if you look at the Bonner and some of those players, they're invaluable players because they're selfless players, either off the ball or on the ball. They're selfless players for the players around them, and that's, I think, what makes the team tick.
Yeah, it does. And I, like you mentioned Conal Keeney, which is a good one. I'm thinking Ryan Dwyer as well, which the battering ram type player.
Exactly, yeah. Like even in 2013 when we were successful that year, we had Conor McCormack playing wing forward for us, and he relatively unknown. He only joined Dublin, but Dalo saw something in him that most managers hadn't, and he was just a bruiser. Like, he'd throw himself around, he liked to leave a hurl in, he was very physical, but he opened the game up with the rest of the half forwards and forward line, and lads loved having them playing beside him. And Ryan's the exact same sort of player. He likes throwing himself about the pitch, and lads love feeding off it. Like, if you have a classy forward, they love nothing more than to see a physical lad beside them and opens up gaps for them and win dirty ball. And lads love that.
They do, Michael. And I think those type of players, the most important thing to bring to it is they attack the space every single time. They break through the space every single time, which sucks defenders to them and frees up the strikers or your ball players at that stage. And you're right, Ryan is definitely that type of player. You know, he just gets it, he goes for the gap. Bonner is the same, goes for the gap. Now you've defenders looking at one another, who's going to take him? Am I out of position? Can I leave my man? And there's always a need, a little bit of confusion as a forward, and then exploit that confusion. And I think that's what those type of players bring to it, as well as being hugely competitive, hugely brave, and hugely selfless for the team.
Yeah. Absolutely, okay. Yeah. No. I think you're right. Quickly on Tipperary, Cheddar, what's your thoughts on them? Like, we see Ronan Maher in midfield now, who seems to be going really well. There's talk this week that he's actually taken a year out. He's in between finishing exams and starting work, and he's like, okay, I'm just going to push back getting the job because Lee Chin can do it. Well, he didn't mention Lee Chin. We talked about Lee Chin already, but Ronan Maher's been performing. I know this time of the year probably suits him, but he's performing really well in midfield. And I remember this time last year we weren't sure where Tipperary needed improvement, but maybe this year they're in a different space where Michael has to find a few players.
Yeah, and I suppose sometimes managers will put their better players in positions that's not familiar to them because another one performed there, while at the same time being able to try out, you know, maybe a lesser known player in a position that is familiar to him. So, you know, some managers, you know, they may be talking about trying the top player, but maybe what they're really looking at is the player that they're trying to find out in another position. But to make that work, they've got to put their better players in, you know, positions that the public mightn't think is familiar. But look back to Tipperary. There is an incredible amount of quality players in Tipperary. I'd have no doubt that Tipperary could play a second team and a third team that would probably give, you know, All-Ireland Championship a fair rattle. So I suppose, you know, the first thing is Michael has an abundance of top-class players available to him to be able to make the changes that he wants to make. But he's really at the stage now of just tweaking the team to trying to get that extra edge and get back to winning. I mean, he's only a couple of pints away from winning All-Ireland in any year with him. And it's just that little extra edge and finding that extra player that's going to do it for him. You know, it might be in Bubbles 2 years ago that just gave them that extra edge and gave them the scores in tight situations to be able to win big matches. And, you know, I think Michael is probably very, very happy where he is. And I think maybe in 4 or 5 or 6 weeks' time, you'll probably see a little tweak or two in Tipperary that just might give them the edge that they're looking for.
Yeah, okay, lads, we'll finish up here on predictions. So we'll go Division 1A first. So the Tipperary and Wexford, that's in Semple Stadium. It's on Air Sport at 7 p.m. Who are you fancying here, Michael?
Tip. I think Wexford are going really well, but Tip and Semple, I think we'll have too much for them.
Okay,
Tip.
What do you think, Cheddar?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think Wexford are absolutely delighted where they are at the minute. But I think I agree with you in Semple. Tipper difficult to beat there. And you know, there'll be a lot of lads that people want to prove themselves in that as well, and either stake a place or hold their place in the team. So I'd shade Tip on it, yeah.
Right, okay, because that's actually going to be a very interesting one, as in it's a team that's using the league to try out players versus a team that's flat out concentrating on the league, you know what I mean? So it'll be, and Tipperary are that bit better than Wexford, but maybe the fact Wexford are targeting it might be the leveller there. So like, I'm really interested to see who comes out of that one, and like I said, that's on Air Sport. The other one in Division 1A is a really, really big one, lads, because this is a relegation battle between two counties, huge counties in the last few years, Waterford versus Kilkenny, Walsh Park at 2 o'clock. Cheddar, I'll start with you with that one. This is a more difficult one for you to call.
You know, a massive game. I think it'll be a huge game. I'll expect a huge crowd there. Great atmosphere at the game. I'll probably give it to Kilkenny here because I think they just need to win at the minute a little bit more than Waterford do, and I think they'll have a little bit more edge that they're hurling maybe than Waterford will in this game. And just based purely on that, I think if just later on in the year and the game is in Thurles, I'd be probably favouring Waterford. But I think just as where I stand at the minute, I think Brian probably needs to get the team winning and that, and I think he'll bring that extra physical edge and that sort of championship fervour edge to a league game. Not that you'll need to bring any more into Welsh Park on Sunday, I'd say, but I just give them the edge on that.
Yeah, I'd agree there. I think this will be very like a championship match.
I think I'm going the opposite. I'm going Waterford. I think Derek McGrath will go back to a more settled team this weekend, and I think in Walsh Park and Welsh Park, I think they'll have more than Kilkenny will. Like, I know Waterford pipped Kilkenny last year by a point in Nolan Park, and they'd be happy with the same result this year.
Yeah, there's never anything too.
No, nothing. No, it's very close.
The other one in 1A is Clare versus Cork, and to me, these are two teams that actually seem to be taking the league a little bit more seriously, along with Wexford, than maybe the other three. So another difficult one to call, Michael.
Yeah, this is the one I really struggled with. They play so similar. Like, they're real teams that play really, really similar hurling. I think it'd be an unbelievable battle in midfield between like Kelly Galvin and Fitzgibbon and Kearney. I think they're four fitness machines. They'll be running everywhere. Yeah. I really want to see who finished on top there, but I'm going to go for Cork.
Okay, you're going for Cork in that one. What do you think, Cheddar?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it'll be very, very tight, and I agree with everything that Michael's saying, broadly similar. It'll be, if there is a bit of open hurling, it'll be quick, a lot of mobility around the field, but I just think that Cork will be a pint or two in for Cork. Yes.
Okay, great stuff. Galway and Offaly, no disrespect to Offaly, I'd imagine we'll all be going for a home win here for Galway, unless you've anything different, lads, shout it out there now quickly. Limerick and Dublin, that's obviously the one we mentioned, and we talked a lot about Limerick probably because we talked a lot about Dublin with you, Michael, last week. Two teams again on the way up. Dublin struggling a little bit so far in the league. Really, for Pat Gilroy, for the pressure on him, they need a win here.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be a really close game, but I'll fancy Limerick in the Gaelic rounds. I think they're playing better hurling at the moment. Dublin are trying to find their feet, aren't really hurling that great. I'd fancy Limerick to win. I think it's going to be very close, though. I think it's going to be a point or two in it.
It's another 50-50 one, Cheddar.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Limerick will win. I think the fact that it's in the Gaelic grounds and that it's an evening game and the Gaelic grounds, I think it would sway it for Limerick. I think Pat, looking at Dublin, is probably just finding, you know, he's finding out more and more each game about his team, maybe rather than just being at the point of being able to get him to perform to the best of their ability at this minute. Very, very experienced man, knows what it takes to turn teams on and that. So I think he probably needs another couple of games just to really know what's going on within his team and that. I think Limerick are obviously a little bit further down the pathway and that. Albeit they're missing a number of players and that, but I think they get down would give them the edge. Yes, and look, they have to go with this.
Yeah. Exactly. The last one then is our own county here, Cheddar. We'll start with you, Laois and Antrim.
There has been a huge amount in the last couple of years. I think the first two games Laois played, they actually performed quite well and played some good hurling. They're missing a serious number of players through injuries, and you know, I'm going back to the point I made very early in the programme, they're for the Laois and the Westmeath and the Carlos. You miss four or five players, that has a massive effect on your team, because your replacements at any given year may not be up to the standard that you actually want. And I'm not saying that we're not at the minute, but they may not be to the standard that you want. So look, it's touch and go, really. It would be really, really important for both counties to win, because getting 4 points would progress you and would keep you in this division of the league, and that would be, you know, that's really the objective, I suppose, for all counties. Stay at this level of hurling in the league at the very least.
Yeah,
I shouldn't kind of go against Laois, so I'll always be giving my vote to Laois.
And the great thing about Laois this year as well, before we get your prediction, Michael Cheddar, is that with Offaly having beaten Dublin, they almost have two chances potentially to get that fourth place. You know, that result went for them.
It does open it up, Willie, all right. And, you know, I think in the last couple of years, I think Laois has beaten Offaly a bad time and vice versa. I would go back, though, Willie, to your earlier point there about Galway. I wouldn't dismiss Offaly at the minute. I think Kevin Martin was a real unifying force in Offaly hurling, and he's a lot of players back playing for their county in the way that they should be. Offaly was obviously. They beat Dublin, I think, it surprised some people. And I saw Galway the last day. Obviously, they have to come in off a win in All Ireland. You know, if Offaly get the bit between their teeth, you know, they have a real fighting spirit about them. And I think Kevin Martin will bring that to them, and they will definitely play for him. And, you know, I would not rule out Offaly in any game this year.
Yeah, okay, no, and that's fair enough. I'm thinking of Galway last year rather than the way Galway have started this year's league. Absolutely. So you would give Offaly a much better chance in that one. Laois and Antrim, Michael, before we finish up.
I think Antrim, they pushed Galway to the pin of their collar the first day.
Be very careful here now, considering
who
you're talking
about. I know, Cheddar, I know. And you, actually, will you forget?
I'd say you're more worried about Cheddar than you are about me.
I think Antrim, you know, I think it's going to be very close. They were very unlucky against Galway, and they should have probably pipped Dublin, and they're hurling well at the moment.
Yeah, you saw Antrim against Dublin.
They are hurling well. They've a bit of a game plan, and they're sticking to it, and it seems to be working. They'll both be eyeing up. It's such a big game, because if Antrim beat Laois, then they'll be eyeing up Offaly and
Dublin. If Dublin lose, Dublin aren't the force we might.
Yeah, absolutely. But they've played Dublin already, so that's done for them. So
Laois
so Laois have Antrim, and then they'll be eyeing up Dublin and Offaly. So it's a huge game for both.
Looking forward. Just a lot of those games are all kind of difficult ones to call, which they were here. Right, listen, as that's all we have time for. Thanks very much, Michael, and thanks very much, Cheddar. We'll be back on Monday with JJ and Brendan Bugler. Talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I won't see you later, and we're not allowed to talk it out.